appetite's gone insatiable. My thirst just can't be quenched. Welcome back, Full Heel Podcast. I am your host, Rafael Chaydez, the host of the Full Heel Podcast. Joining me today, my two buddies, Jeff and Ryan Dempsey. I should come up with a tag team for you guys. Next time.
The Legion of Joes.
The Legion of Joes. Yeah, that would have worked out. Damn it, Ryan. Should have talked beforehand.
Right, right. We didn't have a very good pre-show meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let me get my monster and take a piss.
Real quick talk about the opening match. And here we go.
Here we go.
Some mention of rocking a piss, and here we are.
Yeah, right. Sitting down for a three-way dance.
So joining me today are my two buddies that I met through podcasting, Jeff and Ryan. Me and Ryan usually do podcasts on Mondays, and we decided to have Jeff on for Friendsgiving. It is Friendsgiving week here at Full Heel Studio. I had my friends over this weekend for Heelsgiving, third annual.
Nice.
We all had food, chicken, we all brought over stuff. And I was knocking out. I got the itis on fucking camera. I was fucking smoked out. It was a nice time. It was a nice time. So it was a little extension of it. We can't really break bread because, you know, Jeff's in Detroit. I mean, in Michigan. I don't know why I said Detroit. He's in Michigan.
I say Ryan's closer to Detroit than I am.
And we got Ryan, international superstar Ryan, over here in Canada. So,
Lion Ryan and Jazzy Jeff.
So a little extension of Friendsgiving. So, thankful Cheers. For you guys. Yeah, thankful for you guys Salute. Helping me out with the podcast and being my buddies. So, thank you guys.
Yeah, Rafa, one year ago, we were fucking smoking in this very living room I'm sitting in.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I traveled up to Muskegon to watch the Rewrites play at, was it Unruly, the bar?
Yep, at the brewery.
Yeah, shout out to that brewery, Unruly. It was pretty awesome watching these guys play live somewhere else. And then Jeff got to go up there and spit his beats.
It was a pretty fun time. I played it. Yeah, it was the last show I played, too.
Goddamn, eh?
Yeah, man. Everything I had, I didn't have anything through the winter last year, and everything I had on the books was all canceled once COVID happened. So
makes sense.
I haven't played a show in over a year.
Fuck.
That night, I wanted to kill Smoke Frog. He has fucking sleep apnea or something. He needs a fucking machine. That motherfucker snores like a beast. It's ridiculous. I woke up in the morning and, I kept on getting up and I literally stuffed paper in my ears because I was like, next time if we ever come back, I'm getting my own fucking room. I don't know how these guys slept through it. Like, I really want to get up and punch him in the head and be like, dude, you can't say anything. We're even. We are even. But,
just put a pillow over his head next time.
Yeah, I should have just done it. I should have just done it earlier. I should have just gone to the car. But, like, early in the morning, I went and I had Bud and fucking... got really high in the car and then knocked down the car for a couple of hours. So
nice.
Got a little bit of rest there, had to drive back.
I think Ryan's been lying to us about watching AEW. He's rocking the fucking Brian Cage facial hair right now.
Oh yeah, the chops, eh?
He's rocking the Brian Cage.
It's CM Punk circa 2011.
It's Brian Cage circa 2020. That's the facial hairstyle of the FTW champion, sir.
Yeah, well, you know what? And fuck the world. Here we go.
Gotta get that mohawk.
Yep.
That's the next step, right? And then I'll just get on the roids.
Ooh-wee.
There you go.
Might as well. Why not?
Nothing else to do once lockdown hits, right?
Yeah.
Second round, baby. Second round.
Might as well get swole.
Yeah.
Fucking cameras. It's pissing me off. All right. See if these cameras won't stop fucking up on me. Ryan's keeps on going crazy. I don't know why.
Just like going back to like the
Skype and then back to normal. Skype and then back to normal. And then it switches sizes. Okay. I don't know why. I'm just going to leave it alone. It is what it is.
Fucking Canada.
At Ryan for that, guys. He's at R Demp.
Yeah.
But we're here for Friendsgiving, but we're also here to talk about WWF Survivor Series 1990, which is the debut of the Gobbledygooker.
Yeah, you're 24/7 champion, the Gobbledygooker.
Yeah, 24/7 champion.
Was the most legendary character in wrestling history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Part of one of the greatest families of all time, part of the Guerrero family.
The original Gobbledygooker, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it?
But all kidding aside, it's the debut of The Undertaker. Undertaker just celebrated 30 years in the... In WWF, he's been wrestling for longer, but I guess just in WWF.
Just WWF. I was going to say,
it's the character of Undertaker.
Yeah, so that's fucking crazy. He's been doing it this long.
Which is funny because the first Broken Skull that he did, he was sitting with Vince McMahon, and they told him he was in the debut at Survivor Series, and that was when they started cutting the vignettes for that giant egg.
He
thought that was going to be him. He's like, what the fuck did I get just set myself up for? He had no idea. And he's like, and then when they give him the character, he's like, all right, well, I guess it's better than being in the egg.
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about calling him the Eggman and having him come out of the egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people that don't know that egg that we're talking about, they were teasing an egg for months, just for months. And, to finally have it be just the Gobbledygooker was kind of like the biggest in the world. It just sucked. But The Undertaker was definitely scared of it being him. And
but it's funny how like still like they'll do gimmick battle royales at like a random WrestleMania, and the Gobbledygooker will be a part of it.
Well, he just went
for no reason whatsoever. Yeah. Like, they just bring it back from here. They'll be like, see, it was a good idea 15 years ago for us to do this or something. It's like, no, like, just give up. You tried something, it failed. Like, time to move on.
Yeah, it was funny that they did it yesterday, but to put the title on him and everything, you know, bringing him back would have been something. But
I thought that was pretty ridiculous to put the I mean, I know, like, the 24/7 title is not a prestigious title or anything like that, mm-hmm. but for fuck's sake.
Can it be taken somewhat seriously at all? Like, at all?
Yeah, exactly. Can you have any respect for
that? If they wanted to have the Gobbledygooker be a part of that, the best way to do it would have had him come down during the Taker ceremony and just be like, just tombstoned and like tossed into like a casket, just buried, and like, that's it. I'm gone. You're gone. Let's all move on with our lives.
I'd have been okay with it.
Kind of like the chicken with Kane back at WrestleMania 14. When Pete Rose, was there a 15 when Pete Rose came out as the, was it the San Diego chicken or something?
The San Diego chicken, yeah. Mm.
Mm. That would have been the best way to do it. Just have something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but apparently the Gobbledygooker was going to be a long-term character, right? It just, everyone was like, well, if you guys go back and watch the Survivor Series, when he comes out, he is just booed. They are booing the fuck out of him.
Oh, people are pissed. They've been building up for months to what the fuck this thing is going to be. And then it's this stupid turkey.
Yeah. And even like, well, because you had like Monsoon and Ventura and even Piper, whoever's doing commentary, will try and guess. They're all be like, it could be a dinosaur. It could be this. And everyone's like excitement levels up. And then
Roddy Piper on so much cocaine.
So God almighty.
So,
we talk about how coked out of his fucking gills Roddy Piper was.
I was a little thrown off by him. Was he heel? Was he face? Was he like, I didn't get it. Like he was
his whatever. Face was frozen.
Yeah, he was
Yeah, he was definitely all over the place. But
His little Piper was always like, he was the heel that he was almost like, he was Stone Cold, right? He was the heel that people could always get behind.
Well, he was the baby face for, at certain points, but I think he was supposed to be like a baby face commentator through this. And then, like, you would just get little weird flashes of him saying heelish stuff, but I think it was just the cocaine.
Did the cocaine speaking?
Cocaine's a hell of a drug, man. Rick James taught us that.
Hell yeah.
R.I.P. Yeah, no, but it was throwing me off. And maybe it was because, like Jeff pointed out, because he was on coke. But he was heel, he was babyface, and he was just back and forth. But
he was all over the map.
Yeah, I don't remember him
everywhere. Yeah,
I don't remember him too many times on commentary, at least for pay per views, at least.
In this era, yeah, he was like it was like bouncing around with him or Jesse. They were trying different combinations to see what would work.
Right. Yeah.
Shivani had left at this point.
Yeah.
It was back in WCW. I don't know if Jesse's still there, if he's gone now too.
I think Jesse might have been gone around this time.
So I'm trying to remember if he's in WCW now back or in WCW now too. So I think they're just trying
they're plugging in different people, seeing who would fit, who wouldn't fit, and
because I'm trying. There's another pay per view Roddy did commentary for, but I think they did it in a 3-man booth to try to control him a little bit.
SummerSlam or Royal Rumble.
Yeah, SummerSlam or the Royal Rumble 91 or something like that.
Yeah, because I know he. I don't think he did a WrestleMania. There's no way that they would have had the big guns up for that.
Yeah, that was Vince until what, 9?
And I was gonna say I was weird
out that 9 or 10.
It was only a 2-man booth too.
Yeah,
they had 3 guys in there, but it's whatever.
If Vince wasn't in it, it was generally a 2-man. It would only just become a 3 a lot when they would try to put somebody in there with Vince.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vince would try and like sneak in there just to try and get his input and get his face on the screen a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything else before we get into it and start breaking down the cards? Or the matches, I mean, sorry.
I think the one takeaway for this pay-per-view that I actually did enjoy was that all the survivors ended up meeting at the very end.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Which is a different premise because before it was just like, you survived, that's it, your match is done. But now they're taking...
Well, this is the last of the sole survivor concept. Like, they had been doing it for a couple of years prior.
Okay, I'm glad that, right. I'm glad that you guys brought this up because I didn't get it till like the second or third time I watched it that I was like, what the fuck? I'm like, these guys aren't on the same team. I'm like, why are they in the same team towards the end?
But yeah, it's
a progression style match where if your team wins, you go on. But if you got eliminated during the course, is that how you weren't on the team? Or did like the faces just get to choose whoever they wanted on their team?
Yeah, no, it was whoever survived.
They had the team captain would have chosen whoever for their team
out of the survivor,
and then if you were eliminated, and then it's like whoever the sole survivor of their match would go on. Mm-hmm. So it could be one guy or up to four, and then whoever the heels and whoever the faces were left over at the end would end up facing each other in the final match.
Yeah. So I guess we should just probably get into it then, right?
Yeah.
First match was the Warriors taking on the Perfect Team. So this is kind of the concept. They have team captains, and I'm guessing if you got eliminated during the course of this, you weren't eligible to be chosen towards the end of the match, and like the team captains were the ones that got to choose the team. So that's why it's important that we had captains. So it's the Warriors, it's Animal Hawk, the Texas Tornado, and the Ultimate Warrior taking on the Perfect Team. X, Crush, Mr. Perfect, and Smash. So Demolition and Mr. Perfect. The Perfect Team.
Yeah, the three man fucking demolition.
Yeah.
Because Bill Eadie's near the end of his time of being capable of wrestling.
I think I talked to you about this earlier, Ralph. You look at this match out of the eight participants plus the two managers, you only got the original demolition still alive today. Everyone else in this match is gone now after Amble passed this past summer. Damn. Which is fucking wild to see when you put this on. Like it's starting to get to that point now where you watch these old pay per views and they're all gone. It's
you go back a lot of pay per views from this era. Most of
it's crazy. It's like to see so many names. You're like, oh yeah, he gone last year. He was gone this year. He's gone. Like it's fucking crazy, man.
Let's see. So. The match starts off with, I think it's Animal, and I forget which one of the Demolition guys.
Smash.
I don't know, but they're just going at it.
It was Barry Darso.
Yeah. It's all just Smash. Power. It's just punching each other and slamming each other. You know, typical Road Warriors versus fucking Demolition. And they didn't have too many matches. This is one of the few times that they meet in the WWE.
Well, yeah, their times didn't overlap properly. Like LOD was just coming in when Demolition was leaving, and then Demolition, I think, came back and LOD was leaving. Like their times coming in just didn't meet up to give them enough to get a good program going.
Yeah, well, by the time that the LOD came up from the NWA, like you said, it wasn't so much they were leaving as it was. Bill Eadie couldn't really wrestle much anymore. Yeah, so that's why they brought in,
right?
Yeah, and that's why they brought Crush in, and then things were kind of falling apart. Yeah, and things were just kind of falling apart. So then they started trying to figure out how to recast both of them in singles roles,
right?
And then the Warriors left.
So let's see, Ultimate Warrior event like. Pretty much like 3 minutes, 4 minutes into the match, gets tagged in, and he winds up eliminating Axe, one of the Demolition members. They go at it a little bit more, and eventually Animal is attacking one of the Demolition members, and Hawk is attacking another one of the Demolition members, and they're just brawling it out in the ring, and the ref is trying to get control. He goes up to Hawk, and Hawk kicks him in the stomach, and for some reason... the ref disqualifies all four of them and kicks them out. He's like, get the fuck out of here. You guys are done. So that's I get it. In story, it's a great way of getting rid of all four of them. But in reality, Hawk kicked the referee in the stomach. He's the one that should have gotten out of there.
Yeah, there was a lot you'll see through this entire review, guys getting eliminated that make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Undertaker.
Yeah.
Sorry, allergy season.
What?
Yeah, the weed. Weed made me cough.
Who?
It's not Corona.
Who?
It's not Corona.
I don't know if this. Yeah. I don't know this Undertaker you speak of, bro. Not in this World Wrestling Federation.
Not for another 5 minutes.
Yeah. Not for another 5 minutes. Yeah. So it's a great way of getting rid of all four of them. So all four of them are out of there, and it's what, Mr. Perfect is left alone with Texas Tornado and Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
Warrior.
Yeah. And I love this little tactic by Mr. Perfect here to start off this two-on-one situation. So Warrior wants in. So Warrior's in and Texas Tornado's on the ropes. And Mr. Perfect's like... hey, you got a title, which they both have a title, but Texas Tornado has the Intercontinental belt, and that's usually what Mr. Perfect was going for. I don't
know. Well, and he took it from Perfect at SummerSlam year. So he wants him back.
Mm-hmm. So he's like, yeah, you got a title, you get in here. And then Warrior's like, oh, okay, cool. Turns around and tags him as this guy's getting in. Perfect attacks him on the way in. Perfect heel strategy, perfect heel move. I loved it.
Simply Perfect.
Yeah, Simply Perfect. By Perfect. He hits the Perfect Plex eventually and gets the 1-2-3 on Texas Tornado. And it's a one-on-one Mr. Perfect versus Ultimate Warrior. Ultimate Warrior eventually winds up picking the win, picking up the win by pinfall on Perfect, and the Warrior is the sole survivor of his team. So,
the world champion in the curtain jerker.
Yeah.
But it's important, you got to understand, like, the Ultimate Warrior, if he's going to do two matches in one night, he needs a two-hour window to rest himself, because he he can't go over like the second last match and then the main event. Like, you got to give him a lot of time to rest.
Exactly.
I agree with you 100%. Like, it's so weird. Like, the only way that it could have been worse is if his music was the first one to hit instead of Mr. Perfect, right? Yeah. It's the only way that it's worse.
I did find it weird too that they had the fucking champion in the first match, but that's
Hogan's got to be on top, brother.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Oh yeah, brother.
Doesn't work for me, brother.
Yeah.
Hogan's got a pose.
All day. So Warrior winds up picking the win for his team, and they advance. Next match would be, let's see. So the Million Dollar Team, the Honking Tonk Man, Greg Valentine, Ted DiBiase, and a special partner.
Rhythm and Blues, baby.
Yeah, we got Rhythm,
Rhythm and there. Blues.
Super rare Hasbro figures right there.
Yeah, the Greg the Hammer Valentine, yeah. Fucking Rhythm and Blues, super hard.
Rafa's aunt.
Yeah, my aunt. In the Greg the Hammer Valentine. the Dream Team, taking on the Dream Team, Bret the Hitman Hart, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, baby. Coco Beware, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. So if you guys haven't guessed by now, the special partner for these guys was The Undertaker.
Brother Love.
Brother Love. So it's The Undertaker's debut match here at Survivor Series. Classic Undertaker debuts in gray, purple under the eyes, all pale.
Why the fuck red hair, Roddy, though, eh? Why did Roddy Piper call him a ham hawk?
Yeah, look at the ham hawks on that guy.
Look at the size of that ham hawk. look at those drumsticks.
You know for sure that
Kane.
They for sure had like a list of things, and he lost that paper while he probably rolled that paper up to do his lines.
Oh yeah, but, he snorted his coke with that.
He was trying to remember what to say. Yeah, like when he says ham hawks, you're like, I had flashbacks of when I was a kid watching it and hearing him say it. And they're like, oh, that must be something really big. And now I'm thinking back, I'm like, the fuck does that even mean? Like, out of all the adjectives you could use to describe The Undertaker, you were the ham hawks.
Cocaine.
Fuck, man.
When it's all said and done, now that he's retired, where do you guys put him on the list?
Got to be top four. Up. For longevity, storytelling.
Because I think his gimmick is number one. Gimmick, there's gimmick's never number be a one. Better gimmick.
Gimmick's number one. Yeah, no, gimmick's number one.
To get it and to change to that biker role and then switch back and not miss a beat, to go back to it in 2004 and everything was as if he never changed it was pretty remarkable. And to have that 16-year run, give or take, after that was pretty amazing to do. And the way that he altered it too, right? Like going to the Ministry of Darkness, having the faceplate after when Mabel crushes the orbital.
I was gonna say when he got his face broken.
Yeah, like he always made that gimmick work, and he changed it the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say greatest gimmick of all time. Mm-hmm.
Do you think he surpasses Hogan at all?
No.
No?
Unfortunately. I mean,
Hogan was...
Should he? Probably.
Yeah.
But in comparison to what Hogan did for the business and...
Yeah, that's it.
You can't compare him.
What he was able to draw out of the fans.
What's that?
What Hogan was able to draw to the fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Hogan and Austin, and even to some extent, John Cena, what they were able to do was like main event stars, and how they like Taker. He could have done it, but he didn't need to. He was fine.
Taker was never on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Hogan was the first pro wrestler on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You know, Arsenio, like shit, like
if they put Taker in the mid 80s, he wouldn't have done what Hogan did.
No,
that's the thing. Like Hogan's popularity, right place, right time, ball, like, you know, like catch the flame kind of deal, right?
Because really, I mean, if you think about it, like Taker was just brought in initially to be another monster heel for Hogan. A year from debut at Survivor Series 91, who's he taking on? Hogan.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It was just a continuation of that Monster Factory that they were always rolling out for Hogan. Now he took it and he ran with it, obviously. Yeah, but I don't think.
Well, and that's the thing. Like Bruce Prichard talked about it on one of the thing they'd done a few Taker episodes, but they said like he was supposed to come in as his heel, and the fans at first were kind of, you know, he was the heel. They didn't care for him in a sense, but then they started to turn and they started to like him, and they're like, how do we make this guy like a face? And he's already done it. He's just doing him being him. He's made himself a face. The fans are now behind him. Like this, let's just roll with it. And
Paul was a big part of that.
That was when Brother Love left and Bear came in, that was a game changer.
Like honestly, I think a big part of keeping him relevant post being part of the Monster Factory for Hogan was the addition of Paul Bear.
Yeah, and using Bear to betray him and go with Mankind, and then using Bear
the Kane storyline is so much harder to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. With Bear, like that opened up doors and avenues to go at Bear as well. Like even with the urn itself, like Bear being the controller of the urn and controlling the Undertaker's essence, and you know, every time the Undertaker would get somewhat out of line or just he needed control of him, boom, put it up.
Yeah. And even still, like how big was it, because Paul Bear was gone from WWE for a number of years, and like after the Buried Alive in 2003, when WrestleMania 20 rolled around and it was Taker and Kane, the lights went out and it was Paul Bear, you know, the oh yes, and it was here we like okay, Taker's back, and like everyone was, and those two again, they make the walk, and it was chapter two of the Dead Man.
Yeah.
Speaking of Paul Bearer, and we are speaking of The Undertaker, I guess, because of his debut, but did you guys see his farewell? I know Ryan only caught bits and pieces of it, but did you guys
see the
hologram that they did of Paul Bearer?
So I saw I saw the picture. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch Survivor Series last night, so. Yeah.
I'm glad they did it, you know.
Taker retiring. I think it's beautiful. Cool.
It's a good way. It's the best. Like they had to include Percy in some way, shape, or form, and kind of give you that the shock value. Not just having like the Titantron, like they would traditionally have done, but you know, and that's it.
Yeah, well, especially if you had the technology, and then the fan, it wouldn't suffer because the fans would be there and be like, "Oh, it sucked." You know, there was no fans, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a good tribute, and I selfishly wished it would have been when he put the hat down, but I forgot what year that was. When he put his hat and coat down,
Roman Reigns, right?
Yeah.
Oh, a few years ago, WrestleMania
34. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of wish too, because the last few years there's been some pretty rocky.
Well, he was coming out only for Mania after that, really. The last few years he was, you know, he'd come out for Mania, come out for like the Brock Lesnar angle was his longest angle running in the past five 5, 6 years, 7 years.
Sure.
I think like that WrestleMania, then the SummerSlam, like I think they after the streak was ended, I think like that was pretty much it. Then because he would only come out for WrestleMania, then like, he even said in the Last Ride documentary that he would come out for WrestleMania, then he would go have a couple surgeries, repair stuff, heal, hit the gym, and get ready for WrestleMania all over again. Like that was his routine at the last 2 years. Which
he did that greatest Royal Rumble match with fucking Goldberg.
Goldberg almost killed himself. Yeah, fuck.
It's Goldberg's thing.
Yeah, and I guess he had that Kane match, the match with Kane against DX.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was another shitty match. Like everyone ended up with injuries after that one. Yeah, I think Shawn Michaels was the only one that walked away without going under the knife after that, actually.
Yeah. Oof.
But after that, Shawn said he was definitely never going to come back and do a run.
Yeah, he's like, I'm good.
He's like, I'm not even going to do another match.
It's not worth it, no.
Mm-mm.
All right, let's see. We didn't even actually talk about the match, right?
No, we didn't talk about the match at all.
Undertaker there.
All right. So it was a $1 million team. Rhythm and Blues, Greg Valentine, Honky Tonk Man, Ted DiBiase, Undertaker, with Brother Love on the outside, Bruce Prichard.
And Virgil. And Jimmy Hart.
And Jimmy Hart, yeah. All the managers, all the big managers.
All the heel managers out there.
Yeah.
The Colonel.
Yeah. That's right, Colonel Jimmy Hart.
That's what they kept calling him all night long.
And then we had the Dream Team, Bret Hart, Dusty Rhodes, Coco Beware, and Jimmy Neidhart. They gave these guys 13 minutes and 54 seconds. $1 million team picks up the win. It was a good match. I would probably give it like 2.5. It was nothing to be like.
It's fun to go back and see early Taker like trying to polish up the tombstone. Mm-hmm. That he had the tombstone, then he like went for an actual pin. It wasn't the pin that we know that eventually accompanied the tombstone. So you can kind of see like how he's still new to what he's doing there.
I'm glad Coco is fine after this one. He landed on his like the top of his shoulders almost. It looked like.
Yeah, he took it pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Bret and DiBiase being in this match is probably the only reason why it's a really decent match.
Yeah,
and they gave him a little bit of time at the end because I guess they knew how good they were and they were going to work well together.
This is where Bret's going to start branching out because 91 he's going to have the match at SummerSlam with Perfect. So this was them. This was like, you know, Vince and other guys backstage trying to see what Bret could do solo because they knew that they were going to probably break up the Hart Foundation going forward. So they wanted to see as much as they could from him without Neidhart there as well.
Coco Beware is eliminated 1 minute 39 by The Undertaker. Honky Tonk Man's eliminated by Neidhart. Jim Neidhart's eliminated by Ted DiBiase. Undertaker eliminates Dusty Rhodes, and then for some reason he goes out and chases him, because Dusty Rhodes is going after Bruce Prichard.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Love. Sorry,
but Taker tagged out too. The Taker was even he wasn't even the legal man. He was sitting on the apron and just walked away, and somehow got a 10 count. As Jeff pointed out earlier, we talked about the weird eliminations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I get it, but I guess they could have done it in a more creative way. They want to keep their new guy, The Undertaker, they want to keep him big, bad, unbeatable, so he leaves.
I think the easiest way would have him get clotheslined, like that old school Taker where he get clotheslined and land on his feet outside the ring. Mm-hmm. And as he lands outside the ring, you know, he sees Brother Love being accosted by Dusty. You do something like that and have him get counted out that way. That way he's not getting pinned. Jeff, you are so good looking.
Thank you, sir.
But like they couldn't have Undertaker get pinned or
no.
Submitted. Like there's no way they couldn't. They had to get him out by disqualification or count out. just kind of weird that he wasn't the legal man and got counted out.
Yeah, I'm fine with them keeping him strong and not having him get beat. I just thought it was a stupid way to do
it. Oh, yeah, like, they could definitely tell it in a better way.
I don't know if you heard, Jeff, when you were sneezing there, I was saying, like, you know, if he gets clotheslined and would, like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, that would make more sense. Like, you'd have him do that. Yep. Boom. Because that's a viable way, but nope.
And he's a legal man, yeah.
Yeah, because then you can say that's why. Or, hell, maybe he's just holding a choke on Brett or something to the five count, and the referee disqualifies him.
Yeah.
Like, there's ways to go around it, but, like, I mean, I get what they had to do. It was just how they did it was bizarre.
You had to save it for the upcoming match, Ryan. That's why you had to save that count out for a different
matches.
Bret Hart eliminates Greg the Hammer Valentine. Which leaves Bret Hart taking on Ted DiBiase for about, what I want to say, like 3-4 minutes?
Yeah.
I gave him a good 4 or 5 minutes at the end of the scene. Which was nice because Bret and DiBiase didn't get a lot of matches. But you could see what they could have done storyline-wise, like what they were capable of.
I've seen very few of Ted DiBiase's matches, and it's been later on when he was tagging with IRS.
Oh, IRS.
Yeah, so, Money 8.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I didn't really get to see him a lot in his singles, and I guess this wasn't singles, but we did get to see kind of a singles thing here. I've only heard of how good of a worker he was and seen very few of his matches, but this is a little bit of how good of a worker he was working here with Brett. But everyone... who doesn't work well with Brett? They have to really suck not to work good with Brett.
Yeah.
No, Goldberg. He's not wrong.
Mm-mm. It's kind of funny though too, because I was gonna say, like, you know, like
Raph, he didn't watch WCW, but he's not wrong.
like Raph saying, like, you know a lot of DiBiase by tagging, and I think like people that are close to our age and younger would only know DiBiase from the Money Inc. or a managerial role. They wouldn't know about his days in Mid South and that, and the stuff that he was known for as an actual active wrestler in singles competition before going to WWF back in the late 80s.
Well, even then, like, I mean, I came into the WWF somewhere in and around this time between like late 90, 91. So like I caught the end of his singles run here with like when he still had Virgil and then when him and Virgil were feuding before he started teaming with IRS, and even that's not, you know, I don't have a lot of that memory of his singles days. Like, you would have to go back even further in the WWF for that, or in South or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, right? I think like even WrestleMania 4 was probably one of his biggest things in that tournament.
Yeah.
Because I don't even think like WrestleMania 1, 2, and 3, if I don't think he was there for the first one or two, but if he was there for number 3, he wouldn't have had a high profile match. I think he probably came in right after WrestleMania 3. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
But he
kind of put everything in perspective when Ryan was like, yeah, they're about to break Brett off. And I'm like, holy shit, this is 1990. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, that kind of put everything into perspective. Like, Brett hasn't even won a world title. He's still with Knight, well, besides the tag title.
Flair hasn't even come in yet.
Yeah, Flair hasn't come in yet for the Royal Rumble in 92.
Yeah, because Taker's you're a year away from all that stuff.
Shawn's gonna be later on with the Rockers. Like, it's they didn't even have a long run either. Like, here.
Rockers were in,
and we get to see him here. Like, Warrior being the champion. This is how many times was he champion? Once?
Just once.
Yeah, when he won it from Hogan. So he just won it from Hogan at the previous WrestleMania. So
yeah, he had one match in SummerSlam and now this.
Yeah, it's super early on. It's fucking crazy.
He's at a Rumble. So like, this is the last time he's going to be like, well, he'll appear at WrestleMania or at Royal Rumble, but this will be his last time walking out as champion at a pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. So when I saw the finish, I was really shocked But then, like I said, right now, Ryan mentioning that, it kind of put everything into perspective. So Bret Hart hits a crossbody, and with the momentum, Ted DiBiase gets the pin on him. He transitions it into a pin, gets the 1-2-3, and I was like, what? How did Bret just get beat like that? And then, again, Ryan saying, like, they're about to break Bret off from Neidhart from the tag team and give him a singles run into the Intercontinental Championship. Eventually, it'll be a world championship. Now it makes a lot more sense that it would have been like that. You know, Ted would have been the more veteran of the guys here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the sole survivor for his team here.
And it kind of shows that they are telling that story that, you know, Brett's a great competitor, but he is used to more like that tag action where he would maybe expect Neidhart to get in there and break up the pin kind of thing, right? Like, so he would make, in the tag, he could make a mistake because he would have someone there to help bail him out in a worst case scenario kind of deal. So they can tell that story too in that narrative.
So no Neidhart to bail him out, so he gets pinned. And I guess the sole survivor would move on to the Survivor Series.
Yeah, so now you have Warrior on one side and Million Dollar Man on the other.
Mm-hmm. After this, we have the Visionaries. Hercules, Paul Roma, Power and Glory, with Rick Martel and the Warlord with Slick outside. Taking on the Vipers, which I thought was an interesting name, because the only person really having to do anything with snakes here is Jake.
I don't know. I heard that that Shawn Michaels is a bit of a snake backstage. Oh.
Damn, which one's didn't? I don't know which one it is, Ryan. Sorry.
Yeah, you try to find your button.
Yeah, I don't know which button it is. Air horn?
Yeah. You gotta start labeling those.
Yeah. So the Vipers are Jake the Snake Roberts, Jimmy Snuka, Marty Jannetty, and Shawn Michaels. I guess they're all pretty much snakes, right?
Actually, killed the chick. I kind of take back that Shawn Michaels comment now that I think about Marty Jannetty and Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, Snuka killed the chick. Marty Jannetty's fucking said he's killed a dude.
Yeah, all things considered, actually, Shawn Michaels might be one of the better of the four some ways. If you Jannetty, look at their personal lives.
Jannetty pretty much was like, you're not sucking my cock, and then killed the guy. That's what he said.
Allegedly.
That's what he said. Those are his own words.
Yeah. And then he's like, no, I did it for a promo. I'm like, for what promotion? There was not signed anywhere.
When you were a kid.
Nobody wants you to come do a shoot interview.
Yeah, like the one time he did a shoot interview, he was so fucking gacked out of his mind that he actually contacted them and said, hey, can we reshoot that? They're like, no, like it's already been released.
If you guys go back and listen to Something to Wrestle With, the Marty Jannetty episode, they go over, and I think they realize that he's been the most hired and fired guy in WWF.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's back and gone, back and gone, back for a month, gone, back for a month, gone.
There's also a good Crime and Sports podcast, and they did Jannetty back in March or April this year, and they get into some of his outside of wrestling, they get into his crimes and shit, and like, whoo, fuck, like, if you pair, like, a professional wrestling podcast with that one, you can kind of get, like, his whole story. Like, what a fucking life he lived, man.
And he was supposed to be the more talented of the two, but look, look where Sean ended up.
When you go on Facebook and say, hey, this girl may or may not be my daughter. Should I sleep with her? Yes or no? You've hit rock bottom, man.
That's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start a Facebook poll. Like, no, you're not. Delete. Oh, what a guy. What a fucking guy.
Not even, hey, is this thought fucked up? Nope. Hey, is she hot? Like,
yeah, this may or may not be my daughter. Yeah. I don't know yet. We're waiting on the test. In the meantime,
go for it. Yeah,
I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hit it, and then we're gonna do the paternity test, and you know, hopefully I win.
Yeah.
Oh man, oh man, oh man, what a shit show. And then you got Snuka fucking 30 years later facing trial for murder, and like, yeah, you know, he's gonna be dead within 3 weeks, so we're just gonna throw this one out.
Fuck. That one is so fucked up. Like the authorities didn't care. It seemed like people just did not care.
Well, yeah. You know, Vince paid a bunch of money to the cops to just kind of make it go away, and
yeah, and Nancy, whatever her name was just Argentina. Yeah, she just kind of gets forgotten in all of that. Yeah. I mean, how many people found out about that around the time when he died? Like, what, 5 years ago, whatever it was? Like, that's when people found out that he actually had that hanging over him.
Yeah, because the story got buried so far.
Yep. It's fucking crazy, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah. If you guys want to know more about that, go ahead and check out the... What is it?
Dark Side of the Ring.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, yeah. Jeff. Dark Side of the Ring.
No problem.
Did a whole episode on that. It's pretty interesting. Gives you a lot of facts. We have a pretty good match here, but I don't like how they did the... Well, no, it wasn't a pretty good match. It was a pretty shitty match of how it went down.
It was just the Warlord's involved. Of course it's a shitty match.
Yeah.
You mean Beefcake, Stone Cold?
You mean shoot me up with steroids? Sorry, I think you're full.
Yeah. I think there's a little more room.
Yeah, we got...
Sorry, buddy. I think you're full.
Yeah, we have more steroids, but if we give you more, you're going to die, bro. We can't give you more.
No, it's like, you know, back in the day when you fill up your car with gas and now it turns off, but before it just like shoot out. Yep. You shoot up with steroids, and as they're shooting it up, it just starts pouring out of his fucking pores. Like, it just really, there was no more room for it.
He sweats HGH.
It shot back out. You guys heard that story before, haven't you? Yeah, the Kurt Hennig story.
Yeah.
Where he shoots up Warlord and or goes to stick the needle in. And it shoots back out, and he just looks at him and says, sorry, buddy, I think you're full.
Oh, fuck. No, I don't know about that one.
Oh, God, Conrad tells that story all the time. Oof. It's like one of his favorite stories ever.
It's so believable, too. That guy's fucking just muscle.
Jacked!
Yeah.
He's just a jacked-up Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And he's still alive. That's the fucking shittiest thing about the whole... How is his heart not said peace? Like, I'm out.
Keith Richards is still alive too, bro.
Cool. Yeah, but at least Keith Richards died twice. Like, this guy just keeps on going, man.
You don't know what happened to the Warlord. He disappeared for fucking 20 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he just kind of like pops up and like you see like a random video of him at like some indie show in like a gymnasium.
Yeah, or at a convention. Yeah, him and Barb still fucking out doing it.
Yeah, they come out with the Power of the Pain face paint.
Yeah. Who's going to tell the barbarian no?
Yeah, seriously, yeah. He just says, okay, I'm going to call to my friend Haku.
He's over in Japan kicking ass with his kids.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
But this, you tell this match here was one of those ones where they realized that they only had, well, I think, like five matches, and they had to put a whole main event together, and they needed the bad guys to... have the stacked odds in their favor, right? So it's like you got to bury somebody. So
bury the whole goddamn team.
What a fucking team to bury too.
But and this is another weird one when you want to talk about eliminations. Not to jump to the end, but Jake's it's 1-on-4, and Martel runs away. Jake chases him away. The referee counts to 10. Eliminates Jake, but Martel doesn't get eliminated. Mm-hmm. Even though Martel is a competitor, how is only one of those guys get counted out? The other guy is declared the winner.
Yeah, I don't know.
1996.
Yeah, 1994.
Throw a dart at the board and see what comes out.
Yeah, so Warlord eliminates Marty Jannetty. Rick Martel eliminates Snuka. Paul Roma eliminates Shawn Michaels. And the sequence that Ryan was talking about, Rick Martel comes in and hits Jake in the head with his perfume, his essence. The arrogance. And
tried to blind him again.
Tried to blind him for a second.
We brushed over this. Fucking Jake, his left eye is whited out from when he got hit in the eye, didn't he?
He got sprayed in the eye with the arrogance.
Setting up that blindfold match coming up at WrestleMania.
Okay, I was about to ask, did it happen already, or are they going to set up for it?
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it already happened or if they're setting up.
I think this leads into it because he's still blind, and I think he gets his vision back, and that's what makes him challenge him. Because when he was blind, he learned to trust his other senses, like the snake.
Mm. So he's the last guy left for his team against all four of them, and they even mentioned he can only see out of one of his eyes, and so they're playing that gimmick up too. I think you're right, Ryan. I think they're leading up to that. So he chases Rick Martel with the snake, and he gets counted out, but Rick Martel is not counted out.
Yeah.
So in Survivor Series history, this is the first time that a team has no eliminations on the team. So there you go. It doesn't make sense, but Hercules, Paul Roma, Rick Martel, and Warlord all advance.
So now it's Ultimate Warrior against five guys. So you can kind of tell what's going to happen going forward here in one way, shape, or form. You just don't know how many faces are going to last.
So next match after this is the Hulkamaniacs, which is the Big Boss Man, Hulk Hogan, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and Tugboat taking on the Natural Disasters, the Barbarian,
Uncle Fred,
Dino Bravo, Earthquake, and Haku with Jimmy Hart.
I think that's Uncle Fred.
this is basically like Hulk Hogan and friends. I'm surprised we didn't get Brutus put in there instead of
this is during his accident, isn't it?
He's still at home trying to keep his face together, Ryan.
Yeah. Was that summer?
Yeah.
Because I know he was at WrestleMania 6. I don't know when the accident happened.
Because he doesn't come back till 9.
He was out for a while, right? That put him out for
while. I remember he was out for a long time, but I couldn't really put the exact timeline of when the injury was.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm guessing. Because otherwise he would have been a part of
it. You look at this roster, it's like Hogan and friends at this point, like in that match.
Well, yeah, even for, I think for that Survivor Series that he came back, I think he was part of the Hogan team.
Yeah.
Whatever year that was. But he comes back.
Yeah, because I remember...
Who, Brutus? When he comes back, for WrestleMania, just before WrestleMania 9.
Okay. Because, you know what I'm thinking? It was the year before when it was Zeus and Macho Man in the steel cage against Brutus and Hogan.
Yeah, because
No Holds Barred, the movie, the match, or whatever they build it as.
No Holds Barred Christmas.
I'm a year late then. That's something.
When Brutus came back, it was in '93 because that's how they got Hogan to come back. Was that Money Inc. hit him in
that's
the face?
Right. That's
with
right.
The,
that's right.
With the Anna Shay case. And then Hogan came back to protect him.
Yes.
And then the Mega Maniacs take on the fucking Money Inc. for the tag team titles.
Yeah, that's right. And Macho Man knocked Hogan out cold in the gym.
Yeah.
Supposedly. But Hogan basically it's Hogan versus the Giants at this point.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
But it's weird because Boss Man was always a big heel, and they're like, all right, let's just throw him in. He's a babyface now. He's over with the fans.
Yeah, because Hogan and Boss Man had a feud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why Red Trailer ended up in WCW is because he was one of the guys that Hogan wanted them to bring over.
Well, he had history in WCW before that. He was in WCW before he ever came to the WWE.
No, but when Hogan went there, they're like, okay, like who do you want to work with? And he listed off pretty much everyone in this match in a way, as guys that he'd worked against as heels. So I mean that's but Hogan always had that who he feels comfortable with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Bossman went back to WCW before Hogan ever even went over there.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Garden Angel.
Yeah, he came. Yeah, as I say, he went over in like the 92-93 era.
Okay.
Working as Guardian Angel.
Oh, okay. And then after that was when he went by the Great Trailer name, came out like the more like the all black look.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I remember him more as.
After the Doom, right?
He was Big Bubba Rogers back
in the day. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, because that's what I was alluding to when I was saying before he ever came to the WWF.
Back in the late 80s or mid 80s.
Yeah, he was Cornette's bodyguard. With the feud with between the Midnights and the Road Warriors when Cornette fell off jumped off the scaffolding.
Right.
Bubba was supposed to catch him.
Me and Jeff actually went back and watched that.
Yeah, we watched that when we did our Road Warriors episode.
Yeah. Go ahead and check that on the archives.
Yes, sir.
So the Hulkamaniacs taking on the Natural Disasters. I like how they named all the teams here, either by the captains or, you know, by already existing tag names or whatever.
Except for the Visionaries, that didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, except for Rick Martel's it, but it just the rest of those guys definitely aren't Visionaries.
I wish I had a Rick Martel. Yesterday, actually, my phone is broken. Well, not my phone, but my camera on the light on the camera is broken, so the pictures are crappy. So I haven't been able to take pictures of the figs I've been buying. I got a Mr. Wonderful yesterday.
Nice. Oh yeah, nice. Is this our match feed?
No, I looked at it. No, I checked it out.
That's a fucking great line right there.
It should be though.
No shit. I mean, if you're gonna be legit with it,
mm-hmm. Well, if it's gonna be one of those elite ones where you can pop the arms off and put on different heads, so you can have the pre and post.
So I should put on a Rey Mysterio arm.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, poor man! Poor custom made.
Poor Paul.
I forgot who I was watching a watch along with where he was wrestling. Ryan or with Jesus? I don't know.
I think it was Back to the Beach when he fought Renegade.
Okay, yeah. And his arm was, you could tell, it was pretty small.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
There it is.
Yeah, that late WCW end run for him was kind of bad going back and looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he's still
not. He's a guy that also people don't, like a lot of people today don't recognize. They don't go back to watch enough of him back in the day and how big he was. Mm-hmm.
His ring gear is pretty. It's pretty awesome. It's red and silver, and it comes with a red robe. The back of the robe says "Mr.
Wonderful." Yeah.
Well, he was. He turned heel on Hogan, didn't he?
Yeah,
that was his big heel turn, and like, just a lot of people don't remember it because it was right out of the TV era.
80, 81 or something like that. It was pre WrestleMania days. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Mr. Wonderful, that's where Action Bronson got it from. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Action Bronson, I got my girlfriend into watching that. Fuck, That's Delicious. She had no idea who any of the guys were or anything like that. We watched like a season and a half of it, and she loves it.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, she thinks it's fucking hilarious.
Love it. Well, yeah, it's just action being action.
Yeah. Well, all those, I mean, like, yeah, just that's what I tried to explain to her when we first started, like, turning it on. Like, I gave her the whole backstory on Action. But I didn't tell her shit about Mayhem or Bess. I told her a little bit about Al just because of, like, how good of a fucking producer and shit he is. But, like, yeah, when we started watching it, she fucking loves it. So I knew you'd appreciate that, Raf.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Better than fucking Guy Fieri. Yeah. Fuck that dude.
That's not saying much, though, really.
No. But that guy's got a lot more money than all three of us.
Yeah.
So
that's what happens. You live in Flavortown.
Hell, if I could, I'd live in Flavortown if I could fucking cash those checks.
Fucking right.
I'd be the goddamn mayor of Flavortown all day.
Wear your sunglasses on the back of your head nonstop.
Fucking A right.
Walk into the bank with your check, slap it down. As you're walking back, you just fix the adjust the shades. Hell yeah.
I'd even buy one of those stupid visors with the guy hair coming out of the front of it.
For those checks any day, for sure. You're
goddamn right for those 100%. Checks. And that food. He eats like a goddamn king.
Yeah, get one of those heads too. Because I definitely couldn't grow hair out and do it.
No, I definitely need the hat to do it. But I would do it. Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Come on, do it.
First elimination is Haku. He is eliminated by the Big Boss Man by pinfall. 3 minutes in. And then second elimination, Hacksaw Jim Duggan eliminates himself. He hits Earthquake with the...
Grabs the 2x4.
Yeah, the 2x4. So he's chasing Jimmy Hart around because Jimmy Hart pulled the ropes down on him, so he flew over the top rope. So he's chasing him around, and Jimmy Hart moves out of the way. But
we all know the real reason, though, is that Duggan stopped by and saw Piper on his way to the ring.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Duggan's out of there. Hulk Hogan eliminates Dino Bravo with a leg drop not long after that, pretty much. And then Earthquake eliminates Big Boss Man. These kind of eliminations happen within like a minute of each other.
Yeah.
Tugboat and Earthquake have a double count out on the outside. Another one of those. Each one of these had like a fucky finish of those, like a count out, disqualification. This one had both of them, a disqualification and a double count out.
Yep.
They didn't want to run too late and get cut off in the main event.
How would you know? You didn't watch WCW.
They don't give a shit about the main event. They had to make sure they had enough fucking time for what happens after the match is over.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta make sure that Hogan gets 10 minutes on camera, right?
Gotta pose, baby.
Hogan must pose.
So it's Barbarian versus Hogan at the end. And
boot, leg drop, thermos.
Yep.
Except he wasn't given the Barbarian the thermos because Barbarian would have kicked his ass.
Yeah, 100. Yeah.
So, yeah.
We know who would have been the sole survivors if this match would have been a real shoot.
Oh, dude.
Ming and the fucking Barbarian.
Well, it's like one of the favorite things I ever heard was Iron Sheik. How Hogan was so nervous to work with him back in 83. and he said, I'll do the job for him, but just so you know, if I want to, I'll have my way with him in front of everybody. Just so you know. And 100% Hogan would not have walked out of that ring.
No. No. No.
Next match?
Yeah.
Yes, Hogan's the sole survivor.
That's it, yeah, Hogan gets it.
Yeah, bootleg drop thermos. Yep. Hogan must pose.
Next
10 minutes of fucking posing.
But how are Hogan and Warrior going to work together after what happened at WrestleMania, right? Because they were able to coexist at SummerSlam, but how can they do it for a second time, right? The fucking narrative that was told time and time again all year long. Warrior beat Hogan. How can they team up? They did it. How can they team up again? Well,
after this, we have The Alliance, Butch, Luke, Nikolai Volkoff, and Tito Santana taking on Boris Zukov, Sergeant Slaughter, Sato, and Tanaka with Mr. Fuji and General Adnan outside.
So the thing I didn't fucking understand about this match was why did a team of two guys from New Zealand, a Mexican, and who was the fourth guy? I forgot.
It was Butch, Luke, Volkov, and Santana.
Volkov. Fucking Russian.
The Russian.
Why the fuck are they leading a USA chant with the crowd?
Yeah.
I have no idea, dude. It's so weird.
It's just to get more heat on Slaughter, but it makes absolutely no sense.
Like, you see Butch and Luke, like, on the apron yelling USA over and over again.
Yeah.
None of you are from this country.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's hilarious. Like, I get the reasoning why, but it makes zero sense whatsoever.
Like, that was Tito's whole shtick for years, was being a bullfighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they never made it unknown that he was Mexican, right? Like, it was constantly referred to his entire time, even when he was with Martel.
When he was in Strikeforce, yeah.
He was always a Mexican, but he's American because Slaughter's a bad guy.
Yeah, because they're going against... Like, I get it. I get why. It was really weird, and that was throwing me off from the start.
No, and they're the Alliance. It's super confusing. Amazing name, yeah, right?
So why would a Russian care that Slaughter turned against USA? He'd be happy,
right?
Russia works with Iran.
But by this time, Nikolai Volkov has sworn off his communist ways, and he's a good guy now. He understands democracy. it's like he opened up a book. He's like, oh, we've been doing it wrong this whole time. Okay, I'm pro-American now, guys. Sorry about that whole Cold War thing, right?
And Butch and Luke are too worried about licking armpits.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. That's the other thing. Like, I really, really watched that. Like, when they're walking down, they're licking kids' faces in the crowd. And I remember being a kid being like, that's so awesome. And now looking at him like, if that motherfucker licked Connor and I was like at a wrestling show, I would probably swing at him.
I hope
he
would.
Get your tongue away from my fucking kid. Like, but the parents are like, get him. It's like,
it was the 90s. Parents were irresponsible.
Yeah. Well, it's like that. There's that thing in this. There's a Simpsons I just watched where Bart and Lisa are writing a song. And Lisa says, like, what do you know about writing music? And Bart goes, you know, remember that mental patient thought it was Michael Jackson? And he slept in my bed and we wrote that song for you. And then Bart starts like, wait, why did mom and dad let a mental patient who thought it was Michael Jackson sleep in my bed with me? And Homer walks by, he's like, it was the 90s. It was a simpler time.
It's true.
It's so true, though, man. So fucking trendy. You can see it right here with the Bushwhackers, man. Like,
yeah, man.
There is not a single character in WWE, AEW, Impact, anywhere that could lick a child on the face right now, and it would be acceptable.
Well, no, it's COVID.
Well, you know what I mean. Like,
nobody can lick anybody.
Well, it's not true.
What you do in the privacy of your own home.
But you know what I mean? Like take
COVID. And the privacy of somebody else's home is between you and consenting COVID adults.
Right? Say you have your full arena, and someone there's no way you get away with it. They'd be ripped to shreds.
Yeah,
like it's. But back then, awesome.
Yeah, and of all people, the fucking sheep herders.
Yeah, and they also had slavery, which was approved of, also, right? So,
the shit those guys.
Yeah, they're for
and Crockett.
Yeah, and their foreheads, man. They got that. They got.
If they were if they were licking kids, I don't want to know what they were doing with sheep.
No. Yeah.
Their forehead makes Abdullah the Butcher's look normal.
So yeah, like it's wrestling math. Dusty Rhodes plus New Jack plus Abdullah the Butcher equals sheep herders.
Mm.
That's how mm-hmm. like that. There's your math.
mm-hmm.
Oh, crazy, man. But yeah, like I that USA chant, like I didn't think about it the way that you said until you actually pointed it out.
It took me out. Like that and then like the face paint, Like it took me out of this match. I was just like, I can't.
To me, it would have been better if they had had, if they could have had more, like if they had the Sheik, General Adnan, and Slaughter with someone else, it might have made a little more sense than having Sato, Tanaka, and in the match. But because I mean, that was the SummerSlam match, right? The 3-on-2 it was Slaughter, Adnan, and Sheik.
Yeah.
So why not just bring it back for one more night, just for the sake of the like, storytelling, to really build up the heat on Slaughter a little bit more. It's Thanksgiving. He's already put down the troops, saying the troops are like basically saying that the U.S. troops are shit, praising the Iranian or the Iraqi troops on American Thanksgiving.
Fuck, we didn't even talk about Hogan's promo.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
He told fucking President Bush that they would go over
and
kill Saddam Hussein.
And after we survive our match, brother, if you want to call us in. It was ridiculous. After they were done with the wrestling match, if he wanted to call them in.
We're going to jump on a plane. We're going to go over there. We're going to help you out.
Everybody was hanging out with Roddy Piper that day.
That was in that egg.
Piper's like, yeah, no shit. That's where Piper snuck his cocaine in.
What's in the egg? It's a giant turkey. All right.
Yeah.
Great. Now we got to put a fucking turkey in there, or else the feds will be onto us. There you go. We figured out the origins of the gobbledygooker. Piper made a shit lie, and Vince had to follow through.
Yep. It's to smuggle in Roddy's cocaine. Had to get everybody on the roster high that night.
Yeah. Fuck it. Man, oh, man.
Let's see. So, yeah, this is a weird-ass match. I get what they were trying to go for, but it's just weird. Team to choose to go against it.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
It would make more sense if they had Slaughter be the sole survivor. Really ramp up the USA thing, and then Slaughter, like he's in the same position as Jake, right? 4-on-1, he makes the comeback to be 1-on-1, and then he gets disqualified. Mm-hmm. It makes more sense to rally all the arena against Slaughter, and then he trumps them yet again, and he's going to continue his war with Hogan and the Warrior. He's going to keep on marching forward kind of deal. You know what I mean? But instead they rally the troops, and Slaughter makes that amazing comeback, beats one, beats two, beats three, and DQ.
Yeah.
Like it's just like we've said, like every one of these matches kind of had that elimination where just like, all right, I guess we're doing it. Like, I mean, Tito Santana books a spot beside Hogan and Warrior. I mean, I don't get me wrong, I love Tito Santana, but it's just a very weird position to put Tito in when you had Slaughter with the storyline that they had.
Yeah. Well, wait, they hadn't even got to that storyline yet with Hogan and Slaughter. Well, that comes in at they wrestle at 7, don't they? That's
oh yeah, because when does Macho Man take on, because Warrior's gonna lose the title at Royal Rumble 91 to Slaughter. And then and WrestleMania 90 was in WrestleMania 91 the year that Hogan 90, WrestleMania 7. Yeah, 91.
91, yeah, so they haven't even
it's coming. Yet. But Slaughter's getting ready to get to take on, like his Slaughter had just taken on Hogan and Warrior at SummerSlam, and then he's going to be getting the title shot at Royal Rumble, where he's going to win the title. So they've programmed Slaughter heavy with Warrior and Hogan in the summertime, and they're going to go forward with it also. But for some reason at this pay-per-view, they decided just to, I don't know, like cool it down a little bit for some. I don't know. I think Hogan and Warrior versus the Visionaries, DiBiase and Slaughter would have been better. really like stack the card, really make them go at it. Because that's what you, I mean, they lose Tito anyway, right?
Yeah, but I don't think they would have, like, in their mind, they couldn't put it 6-on-2.
Yeah, but I mean, fast forward, like, what, 15, 17 years, they did that 17-on-2 handicap match or 17-on-3 with Orton, Cena versus the entire Raw roster.
Sure.
But I mean, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. It's just weird that they've built up Slaughter's being this huge heel, feuding with like Captain America and the WWF champion. They had the match at SummerSlam. They're going to be setting up a title shot for Slaughter, but at this point in time, he's just going to take a DQ loss and he's not going to have a chance to get his hands on them in the main event. Just
keep him clean.
Yeah, that's true.
You put him in the main event match, either Hogan or Warrior are going to have to beat him.
Or have him get disqualified at that point in time.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, it's, I don't know, just, but yeah, again, it's, but like, I don't know.
It's just keep them strong more than anything.
Yeah.
All right. So advancing into the last and final match are the winners of the Survivor Series matches. So we had the Ultimate Warrior advancing in the first one. Ted DiBiase from the heel side advancing on the other side. And then Hercules, Roma, Rick Martel, and Warlord all advancing on one side. So now we have five and only one babyface in Ultimate Warrior. Hulk Hogan joins Warrior, and Tito Santana join Warrior.
Arriba.
Arriba, arriba. Andale, andale. Oh, sorry, that's Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah, I was going to say wrong Mexican stereotype.
Yeah. Hulk Hogan, Tito Santana, and the Ultimate Warrior take on Hercules, Paul Roma, Rick Martel, Ted DiBiase, and Warlord, with Virgil and Slick on the outside. 3-on-5 Survivor Series elimination match. I wish they would explain it a little bit better. If you just get to this point and you're not paying like a ton of attention in the beginning, and I don't know, it wasn't explained that well. That it would have wound up a 3-on-5 or something like that, or it could have wound up like that.
Yeah, they didn't really, all they said was the Souls Fire. They didn't really specify that it was going to be 4-on-4, they said 5-on-3 or what. They
expected you to know because it was a reoccurring concept.
Yeah.
Shame on them. I'm glad they dropped it, though. I thought it was stupid. I never liked the Soul Survivor concept.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Let's see. So we have Tito Santana eliminating the Warlord right off the bat. Ted DiBiase eliminates Tito Santana pretty fast. Actually, did I skip the gobbledygook?
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I don't think we need to touch.
It was right before. That's how big of a deal it was. It was right before this match, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he was
going to. Yeah, they had to give some time for Tito to rest up.
They had to give him time to dance with Gene. Damn it.
Yeah, that's sure. Doing the hoedown pretty much or whatever.
Yeah, Gene dances right. For a while. They both dance for a while.
Gene eats shit trying to run the ropes.
Yeah.
Gene ate shit hard trying to run the ropes.
And that's why he just usually interviews people. You see.
Oh, he was drunk anyway. He didn't care.
No. By this point of the night, oh god, yeah.
And to be doing what he was doing with Hector Guerrero, yeah. Dancing like that, like all ridiculous about it. Dude, can you imagine being one of the Guerreros and they make you fucking do this bullshit?
I mean, they made Chavo dye his hair blonde and call himself Kerwin White.
Fuck. I still can't get over that one. That was like, yeah, hitting the golf course. Was it Dolph Ziggler was his caddy?
Yeah. Fuck.
God damn it.
Was Dolph Ziggler his caddy?
After the Spirit Squad, Dolph Ziggler's persona was, you know, Curran White's like best friend or whatever, sidekick or whatever. And then after Eddie passed, they decided we're going to give you your proper name and everything back. And Dolph kind of benefited, I guess, because he didn't have to be involved in some shit angle.
Yeah.
Instead, he just wasted all of his talent by not getting the respect he deserves for what he does.
Let's see. So I said Tito Santana got eliminated by Ted, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Hogan eliminates Paul Roma. And then Rick Martel kind of just takes off. He gets counted out. He doesn't want anything.
For real this time.
Yeah. This time for real.
this time it sticks. He's like, yeah, let's try this again, guys.
Pretty, you get counted out twice for it to count. Yeah, so Rick Martel just voluntarily leaves. He doesn't want any part of Hogan. Hulk Hogan eliminates Ted DiBiase. And then Ultimate Warrior eliminates Hercules. And the sole survivors are Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior.
Because you can't have your champ lose, and Hogan's got to pose.
Uh-huh.
That's how it works, right?
Boot, leg drop, thermos.
What a cop-out to have both Hogan and Warrior.
Yeah.
Stay towards the end. That's not a heel, or that's not a babyface thing to have for a team. Shouldn't it have been the other way around? Hogan or Warrior working their way back against two of the heel team guys?
Yeah, like, and they could have done like what they did at WrestleMania, where Hogan was counted out against Andre. There were ways we've discussed already earlier with Taker and that, like, you can get eliminated without being pinned or submitted, right?
That's not gonna work for me, brother.
No, I did it once. That's it.
Yeah, he's not when I'm trying to work my way back on the top after I did the job.
Yeah,
Suburban Commando is over, baby.
Yeah,
That's why he's super short hair, Hogan.
Just yeah, coming off, right.
Just came in off the set of fucking Suburban Commando, baby.
The one thing actually that was skipped over too was Macho Man wanting his at one point
Macho King
cutting the promo of wanting a title shot, which is going to lead to that amazing. I think you got the fig, with the Royal Rumble, where he's going to finally get his revenge on Warrior.
Was it orange?
Yeah, hits him with the lights.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I did have that fake.
Yeah.
What's funny is, even though Hogan lets Ultimate Warrior get the pin here, Hogan runs in and does the three count. And then Hogan...
That's right.
And then Hogan's holding the ropes for Warrior, and he's like, come on, get out. And then Warrior's like, nah. And then he pulls him into the center.
Don't
and then,
forget he's got this shot, baby.
Yeah, and then he goes and he holds the ropes, and then Hogan gives him the thumbs up. And he's kind of just there. And then he starts posing again. And then he starts going again. He's like, no, fuck you, dude. You don't hold it for me. And then it's kind of a dick measuring contest. Like,
no, that's exactly what it is.
This is my ring. Get out. Pretty much. It's pretty much them telling each other, this is my ring, get out.
Yep, the fan, like, who's the fan going to cheer? Who are the fans going to cheer louder for, me or you? Mm. Just go back and forth.
Yeah, and it kind of ends with them on the apron, both holding their hands up. It's kind of funny.
Guess where it ends? Not with the Warrior.
Nope. Because Warrior... I don't know if he didn't want to do the job for Hogan at Mania or what, but because he beat Savage at WrestleMania 7 in the retirement match, so it's not like he's not out of the company. So it has to have been something along the lines of that he didn't want to do the job or something.
100%, that's what it was. You can see it right at the end that just those gestures, you can tell that. They didn't want to give any ounce or anything to the other one that they were better than me.
they don't want to lose the title, not realizing that if you lose the title, you make more money in the second, third match and all that stuff. They don't.
Didn't he try to hold when was it that he held up Vince for more money to drop the title? Wasn't that at the Rumble against
Slaughter? And Slaughter, it might have been. Because he ends up being out of the company shortly after mid-91. And then he comes back and he leaves and he comes back and he leaves and then he's gone until WrestleMania, whatever, 11 with Triple H.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I think that's when he held up.
It would make sense.
Because he has gone for a while because they talk about him coming back, and he just doesn't come back for a while.
Yeah, because he comes back at the One Survivor Series with what's the Macho Maniacs or whatever they were calling him. So the Ultimate
Maniacs. The Ultimate Maniacs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dig it. Well, that was it, guys. That was it for the pay-per-view. Even though there was a lot of fuckery and it was real corny, it was nice. It was a nice visit down memory lane. 30 years ago.
It's fun going back and watching those old characters from your childhood sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. You realize that the event wasn't as good as when you were, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9. But seeing those characters kind of brings back it hits the nostalgia button just the right way.
Yeah, and you hear about what Hogan's antics and, you know, this and that, but you actually get to see them, like... The holding of the ropes after this guy wins.
The holding of the ropes. Yeah, the other guys wanted to leave and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, putting his dick in people's face when he pins them.
Yeah. It was...
This was, I think, the second or 3 years in a row, Bad News Brown walked out on his team. And this is either the second or the third time where he didn't even show up for the pay-per-view. And yeah, they had to plug someone else in. I forget what which match it was, but Bad News Brown in the two Survivor Series he was a part of, he walked out on his team for the count out, and then this one here he didn't even bother showing up to the event.
Maybe it was in the Mercenaries, or no, sorry, the Alliance.
Yeah, mix.
That was a weird ass team.
One of those random names.
Yeah, but Bad News Brown was a heel, so he wouldn't have been with
the Alliance. Oh, yeah, he wouldn't have been, no.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Hogan Must Pose, baby. I want to thank you two guys for joining me and helping me do this. We got to do this more often.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, the last one we did was the ECW, right?
Yeah.
Back in springtime.
Mm-hmm. And we can even, if we choose, since it's Mondays. Oh,
who replaced Bad News Brown? Undertaker. There you go. So the Undertaker was the replacement for Bad News Brown. So who knows? If Bad News Brown just shows up for the thing, who knows? Undertaker might end up as the Eggman.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. Mm-hmm.
We could do, if we want to do short watch-alongs, since it's Mondays, we can choose early Raw or Nitros before they were 3 hours. Or we can stick to doing breakdowns. Up to you guys.
Yeah, I'm down for
that one. I got to figure out what's going on with the network.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Signed out.
Yeah.
One way or another, I'll figure something out. Mm-hmm. I have access to it at my parents' place. It's just a matter of finding the time. To sit down, but watch longs might be difficult, but we can definitely do breakdowns for sure.
Okay.
Break it down.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for helping me break down this card. Anything before we get out of here? Ryan?
Yeah,
Jeff?
I just want to say thank you. I'm going to say thanks, you know, being your Thanksgiving this coming week. Thank you too for everything that you've done this year for me. Everyone's had a rough go, but in my world, it's been a fucking shit show and a half. And I'm happy to have a couple brothers that have had my back and reached out to me in times of need and listened to me vent and bitch. I appreciate everything that you guys have done for me this year, and I thank you very much.
Love you, buddy.
Well, love you, man. I don't know how to follow that up. How do you follow that up?
Ryan didn't watch WCW. Well,
that's a given. Happy actual Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, guys. Thank you for joining me for another episode and extending the Heels Giving tradition for another day where I get to talk wrestling and enjoy some time with my buddies. Thank you, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast. Download, drop your comments, rate and review. It really helps out the show, and it's really much appreciated. So thanks a lot, and we will see you guys next time on the Full Heel Podcast. Peace out, guys.